unidentified wargamer. Each week I interview a wargamer and identify them in the hobby. This week I've got on the undead life of the party, Tomb King Tristan.
We just missed a crisp crack of a delicious sapsucker.
Oh, what is that? Is that a cider?
No, it's a non-alcoholic organic sparkling tree water from a maple tree that has a hint of grapefruit.
Oh, nice. Very boutique-y of you.
Bro, these things are so deadly. They're so good.
Lucky they're non-alcoholic. Like,
oh, yeah. But unluckily, they're like $3 or so each, even at the
That's
depth.
Not cheap.
So it's like,
yeah, yeah.
Fuck.
That's the price you pay for like bottled alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. It's like the same as like just grabbing a seltzer or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like whatever's in my other hand. So it's like which one do I go for? What kind of decadence do I want? And to yep. At this exact moment, I want a grapefruit sapsucker.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I've got some water here because it's still nice and early for me. I've had a coffee already, so I'm ready to go now. But too early for a drink, like with Bud's podcast, way too early for a drink unless I'm at a tournament.
Proper thing. Yeah, I heard that. I was like, Bud of all people calling you out. I like it.
I know.
He's that.
How's your week been treating you so far?
It's been one of the best weeks I've had in like 5 years.
Oh, nice.
Honestly,
that's what you want.
It's been killer, man. I just got a new job, like officially this week. I'm about to start next week, so I've just been winding down on my old one. And it's been really funny watching it all dawn on them how much work I do. So like half my job is going to be like put out to a contractor, and the other half of my job is now going to be with a whole bunch of engineers. Like I'm on the shop, like at my, now I could say my old job. I'm at the, I was on a shop floor electrical panel technician. So I built breweries. So like a whole bunch of breweries that are actually down by you, I've built. Like I built the control panel
that's
like the size of a refrigerator that runs like all the motors and pumps and all that jazz. I built that. And as time went on, I also took on like programming them, being the one that QC'd them, being the one that troubleshot if people called in from like Australia or whatever. Like I just took on a whole bunch of different roles because I was like, oh, yeah, we can figure that out. Yeah, we can figure that out. And now they're like, oh, shit. We're going to have to have people do all those jobs, aren't we? I'm like, yeah, sucks to suck, guys. Peace. Yeah, there's been that.
Yep.
My wife's health has had a nice rebound. She's been dealing with, yeah, like she's in remission for cancer for the last like 4 years or so. She's been dealing with stuff like bouncing up and down, and so it's been really hard, but we're in a really good point for her right now. Like she's been like biking everywhere. It's been killer.
Oh nice.
She started getting back into yoga like yesterday. And then we got to the beach for the first time because it's like prime summer. It's like summer's finally kicked off, like 30 degree like breezy day. It's like all the kids are out from college and stuff. So my little guy, Felix, I picked him up early from daycare because I took off from work because I don't care anymore. I packed a cooler full of like ice cream and like bubbly waters and like a couple of like chips and stuff that he likes. And we just ripped out to the beach because I live on a little island just off the Atlantic coast. And it's like 20 minutes and we get to Shangri-La, basically. It's awesome. And so we just ripped out there and stuck our toes in the water. And this is the first year he's been brave. He picked up a live crab and chased a little kid with it. It was awesome. I was like, my son is my son. Ah. It's been that.
He dropped me.
Yeah. Yo, dude, he was asking me if he could watch me play the new Zelda game. And if we could
it
so he could watch. And I was like, you're 4. What is happening?
You need to get him one of those disconnected controllers so you can feel like he's playing as well while you play the game.
That's genius. I need
seen a lot of people doing that recently. Yeah,
like
it seems to be
like
the way to it keeps them involved and feel like they're playing, but they're doing nothing to affect your game.
Yeah, it'll probably be my old roommate Lucas though. He's got some rage issues. Just gonna start rifling the thing. You'd definitely be the guy that would doom the Titanic ship.
Yeah,
got pissed off at his controller rifle against the wall. Beautiful.
Too soon.
Man, they're billionaires. Hell
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Sucks to suck.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah,
it's an
exactly.
implosion joke. Nice. Yeah. But yeah. So yeah, best weekend of my life for like one of the last few years.
Oh, that's what you want to hear.
It's been great. So nice end cap of the week, Sam.
It is. Yes. Good way to, well, you still got one more day at least, so you can keep it on proving.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's my Saturday, your Sunday. Sweet. All right. Forgot about that. Nice.
Yes. Have you so no chances to play Warhammer this week?
No, unfortunately, my buddy, who actually went to a tournament with me recently for the first time, he said last minute, my girlfriend really wants to go to the beach and she just bought a new bikini. Is it cool if I just not go? I was like, yes, definitely. I salute you. It's like, it's one of those, you have your priorities right. Make your partner happy and make yourself happy because you're going to the beach. So it's like, respect, yes, John. Let's indeed go. Yeah. So I had my pal Nope out of a game, but I did finish a commissioned paint job, which was nice. I do that part time. Mm-hmm. And I just dropped off Angron for the new 40K kickoff for today.
Oh, cool.
To my buddy Matt Shelfoon. And he, he was just tickled pink. Like, he was just absolutely glowing when I dropped it off to him. He was playing he's playing cards down at the one of our local game shit stores. And like, he had people come like shouting at him from the back being like, yo, that thing looks sick.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
Oh, it was, it was pretty prime. He's a great dude, and I was really stoked.
You enjoy commission painting then?
I enjoy it being done, and I enjoy...
Doesn't everyone?
and I enjoy figuring out how to do it fast and make it look good. Yeah, sure. I don't hate it, and it's like, it's nice to get money to then buy my own toys. And also, that means my friends' armies are painted and aren't just pieces of gray things.
Yeah, so that's fair. Because I know a lot of people, they start out sort of going, oh, I'm going to turn this into like a commission sort of job and enjoy painting up models. And then they get to the point where they're never painting their own stuff and they're just painting everyone else's models. So then there's the enjoyment gone from sitting down, relaxing and painting. You're now painting everyone else's models.
Yeah. And that's kind of like where I get with it. I remember I painted a Bone Reaper's army and, not to bury the lead, but I hate those models with a fiery passion. They're so ugly. But he's like, I will pay you a large amount of money to paint me an entire army. And I was like, okay, it's a lot of money. I could buy a couple Necro Sphinxes. Yeah, okay. And then I did it. It's like, I definitely like promised a lot more than I could deliver in a short amount of time. Dragged my heels, finally got it to him, and the dude ended up selling it for more money than he paid me to pay it. Like, thanks, Alan. Dick. I appreciate the fact you know the value of my work and you know how to undercut it. It's good.
Well, there you go. That means that's what you could do as a job is add extra models to paint to sell, and you make more money than what you would as a commission painter.
Nah. And about that life, I would much rather obsess over painting tiny little triangles of like four layers of highlights for myself. It's much more
that
fun.
Is true, yes. So yeah. You've got a fully converted Gargan army that's all Tomb King inspired, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I obsessed over that for most of the pandemic times. Well, at least the closer the pandemic, because the pandemic is still going on. It's fun. It's great. But yeah, I've got a full one of those. I still have like probably three different conversions I'm still thinking about doing for it, but with how I've been gaming lately, it's been kind of like pushed off to the side. At least with this edition, it's been like, I don't want to play that army.
That's fair. That's very fair.
But yeah, I've got a full one of those. It was tons of fun to do. And like, it's one of those moments where you pick something new to try each different, like, since they're such big projects, each one of the Gargans, I picked a different sort of thing to focus on with each one that I did. For the first one I did, which was like my little man crushers, it ended up being I wanted to try to focus on playing with different textures. So it was like glossy and like matte, hyper matte, getting into weathering powders too. Dayton from our podcast, Party at the All Points, he talked me into trying weathering powders. And I was like, how do you do this? Because I knew that he did it on his army and I love the look of it. And he was like, you just put it on, Tristan. There's things called fixers and stuff. He's like, yeah, that's if you want it to look muddy. No, you just put it, you put it on the base. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, you put it on the base. It took me like a week to understand. I actually just like take the little brush and poke it on the base and then try not to blow on it too hard.
Yeah.
That's how you did weathered powders. I'm like, what?
I don't know if weathering powders are just straight pigments or if they've got something in there that's like a little binding agent or if they just stick in the crevices. Because, yeah, that's what I do is I just dust them on different spots to make them seem a bit textured. But like, it seems to stick really well. I don't know if that's a property of dust or if that's a property of the pigments or what. So I don't know.
I have done no research. As a person who does obsessive amounts of research into a lot of different things, I've done no research into weathering powders. And it's just going to be one of my cultural blind spots where I'm just like, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It goes on the thing and it looks pretty. This one is orange. Yeah. This one is not orange. But yeah, so like did that with one, did a whole bunch of sculpting, so I got like really into green stuffing stuff, like got a whole bunch of tools, watch a whole bunch of these crazy how to sculpt videos from a guy called the Tyromancer, or Mr. Pink. Actually a few different people gave me some really great tips on how to like do green stuffing and like what to mix it with, so I've got it like really set up well. And then another one, I did a whole bunch of blue stuff molds. So it's cool, like thermo silicone, plastic. Basically, yeah. So like plastic silicone where you can heat it up, melt it, like basically press mold it. But I like, this is one of those things I researched way too much. And I watched about like probably 20 different YouTube videos and like looked into like molding techniques, like how to actually do like spin molding and stuff like that to try to figure out like what would be the best possible way to do it. And then I got I just got super good at it. And it's like, now I just have that skill set, which is great. And so, like, I was
able to get... Let us in then. What was the best method or way to do it as someone that... Probably most people that you would see on YouTube probably do it for more large-scale stuff, not necessarily miniatures. How did you find the best way for miniatures for it to work?
So, whenever it comes to blue stuff, it was, like, boil it, get more than you think you should of the blue stuff sticks. So, that way you've got, like, a lot of play for, like, how much area you're able to do and how much depth you're able to have. You boil your water, you... pour it directly like in a like let's say like a pot or like a saucepan, basically something that's used to taking heat, and you put your blue stuff into it. But then you make a little press box, so you make like I've seen people do have really good results with Legos, but whenever where I work I get stainless steel basically for if I want the scraps I can just take it. So I made a little box that was just the ring, so not the bottom or the top, and then I had two pieces cut on a CNC machine to actually fit perfectly inside of that box. And it's like kind of thick. And then I grabbed three or four different C clamps that had like kind of like a ratchet screw. So you put your like you'll put your square box down on the table with the bottom on it. You'll press your blue stuff into it. So it's about I'd say half the volume or so of the like the piece itself of like of the box I should say. And then you press the details that you want, like let's say you want to make some shields or something, you'll press the side of the shield that you want to be the most crisp into the bottom of it, so like face down, and then you'll let that cool all the way, like have your pieces have it cool down, like maybe not all the way but a fair bit. Then you'll use something called Nivea, which is like a skin cream.
Oh, okay. Like so, a moisturizing cream.
Yeah. It's like a moisturizing cream, but it's not like it breaks down, but not too much. I don't know where, like what other comparables there are around the world.
We have Nivea over here. So,
okay, sweet.
That's most perfect. Australian listeners, it's easy enough.
Yeah. So you just take Nivea, you like kind of wiggle it around, like in the spots that you didn't use. You take a couple of backs of paintbrushes, poke it down, so you've got kind of like these little posts for your next layer of blue stuff to go like almost push down into. Then you pop your next layer of blue stuff on top, press it down so it's kind of smooth, take your other like metal top I had and then put it on top, and then you take your C clamps and you actually C clamp it down. Okay. And then so it gets like hyper pressed, but you can do the same thing with like a Lego, like brick, like you make a little brick wall of Legos, like if you ever wanted to make a cute little cottage. Basically make a cute little cottage of Lego bricks. Then you have two little like movable pieces inside of that wall that you can then use your C clamps on. So that way it gets hyper pressed and hyper compressed. You leave it there for I'd say 20 minutes. Like, because my stuff's made out of metal, I'm able to put it on like a cold floor, even toss it in a fridge and let it cool off really quickly. And then you take it out, get a mixture of half Aves epoxy sculpt, half green stuff. So this is this other epoxy putty that it has kind of the opposite properties of green stuff. So it you can still sand it, but it's a lot more stiff. But it mixes so well with green stuff, you still get all like the sweet like little details of green stuff. So it becomes like hyper detailed, but strong enough that if you like you bump it, it doesn't have that wiggliness that green stuff has.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So oh, sorry, I'm just burping because of the sap sucker. Cheers to a lovely Canadian product from Ontario, one of my least favorite provinces. Yeah, so then you do that, you slap your green stuff, you try to get about the right amount in. Like you can actually make little channels so that way whenever you press something, the excess will drift into those channels. That's something that I learned from spin molding, is like you want to have the little kind of like how Warhammer molds have like the little posts that go into everything, like where you clip it off from the sprue. Those actually can, if you think about that with group blue stuff molding, I feel like I'm going really in the weeds here, Sam. Is this too much? My friends tell me sometimes I just get into way too many details. So I don't
It's
know.
the white claws that don't help either.
No, they don't. No, I'm like, what am I drinking? It's a raspberry one? Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so you make these little channels. You can do them with like any kind of like little sticks or any kind of like anything like that. You put those so then like they go with your piece. So then whenever you press down your mold with your green stuff, you let it sit overnight. Since there's no air, it's an air cure, green stuff air cures with the air. And if you did it the way that I said, actually this like hyper compression with your C clamps makes it so it takes a lot longer for your
Oh,
stuff to actually cure. So
that's
instead of
the tip of
waiting.
the day there, is
Yeah.
the curing. Yeah, because if you're leaving it for so long and it's not curing, well then most people whip it open within 20 minutes or whatever else, and then
Yeah.
you're trying to touch it and it's not cured at all.
Yeah, exactly. So like you have to wait like basically 24-ish hours, and even then it'll still be a little bit pliable. So, which is nice, because then you'll be, if you're like trying to force it around pieces, you can actually let it sit for more like 16 and then be able to like push it almost into its shape but still keep its main properties. But yeah, if anybody has any questions on blue stuffing, I can actually like give you visual representations of what I mean. But the big thing is actually that press box. If you want to get not so knacky with it, if you look online, look for tofu press boxes. They actually like are almost the exact same thing, like tofu press box. So like if you're trying to make tofu at home, it's like basically like those C clamps that so you can get that pressure on the inside, and then like you have your four walls of containment. It's what makes it super crispy.
Okay. It's sort of
Yeah.
almost like doing silicone mold making, it seems, where you've got to have
Yeah.
all the vents and everything else to make it work properly. Because if you probably shortcut it, is where people get the results they don't like because they've tried to do it on the easy. Like if I was to pick up blue stuff, like I've got something at home here that I've never used, like it's just from somewhere else, I would never have thought to do any of that. I would have just got the hot water, burnt my hands on the blue stuff, trying to
Oh,
mold it
man.
around whatever I was doing. And then I'd be frustrated and then leave it because I've not done the
Yeah, no,
research.
I like pick it up with like forks now, because I've actually that's a lie. I've never picked up a fork. So I've always picked up my fingers. But I worked in coffee shops for like a decade plus. So like my fingers basically have no feeling whenever it comes to heat anymore. It's like, oh no, that is burning. Yeah, cool. Oh, okay. It's blazing hot
Blisters,
water.
yeah.
My fingerprints are still not the same. Yeah.
So you've always sort of been into like re-sculpting and modeling and conversion work for your armies. Is that a thing that you normally do?
Yeah, I've been like head swapping stuff since I was 13. Almost everything I do, I want to put that like special little spin on it. Because I'm super specific with my aesthetic choices whenever it comes to a lot of things in life. Like it's silly. I've always been the guy that cares what things look like and cares like what the whenever I'm putting myself forward in something, when it comes to art or when it comes to like even, I don't know, how, well, it's mostly art, like how I dress. It's like I dress how I dress. But I've been involved with like artistic pursuits a lot, and for me, in a lot of those, it's like these choices matter, and like I love thinking about it. For me, that's how I spin out. Like in the middle of the night, I'll be thinking about like conversions and stuff. It's like, oh, but I could use that like joint piece actually as a, like a shield for this guy, or like a weird jetpack or something, or like that like piece off a retributor could be a really sick little backpack for my lore master, like lore seeker guy that I've made for my Cities of Sigmar army. Let's go. Okay. And it's 1 a.m. and I'm writing this down in a little tiny journal or something.
I'm guessing you have a little journal next to you then when you're in bed.
Yeah, it's in my phone, but yeah. She's like, turn off your phone. It's bright.
I'm going to try and sprinkle some listener questions in while I go, because there's a lot of them. They're not Tristan Gray level amount of questions, but they're I did ask Bud some questions when he was on, and he wanted to know what your most proud conversion was.
Ooh. I'm really proud of that. One of the first conversions I did, actually, we were going over to Halifax to get an ultrasound done on... Halifax is like a four-hour drive away in another province. We had to go over to get an ultrasound done for my son whenever he was still inside my wife. And whenever we were over there, I saw a... You know, the... Oh, God, they were the postmen. What were they actually called? Skycutter chariots? That's it. So I saw a skycutter chariot. In my head, all of a sudden, I was like, oh, I need to make a Tomb King that's being pulled by a gigantic undead vulture that's on this, like, decayed, like, it doesn't make sense how it's still in the air level of sky, like, sky chariot. Because obviously, Tomb Kings in the skies being pulled by gigantic undead birds is the coolest idea ever.
That's very cool.
Because I got really into, and so I made that. Like, I figured out, like, okay, get a Lord of Change head, get it somehow melted onto the body of this thing, like, cut into the wings so it has, like, exposed bones, some wrappings. And that was kind of, like, the one that set off a whole bunch of, like, my journey into doing conversions and not being afraid of messing up. Because at the end of the day, you can always get another kit. And for the most part, you can always salvage something if you mess it up. And I was really scared of like being like, I don't want to buy like a $100 kit just to take like half of it and smash the rest of it and then make it. Oh, gosh, am I really going to do this? But at that point, I was so concerned about my son coming out of my wife. I was like, fuck it. It's $70. I'm buying the damn thing. I don't care. This makes me happy at this moment. And then I made it and it's great. And it's one of my favorite things I've ever done. It's like, it's kind of was like the tone setter for a whole lot of things I've done in the future. So yeah, I think that's the one. That's the
one.
If
you can send me some photos of that and also of your, Mega Gargant conversions, I'll throw them along with the podcast episode.
That way people
can get a visualization of trying to, rather than us trying to describe what they look like. And I've just realized 22 minutes into the podcast, I've not done an intro or introduced who you are.
I just talked a lot, sorry. I am literally half cut.
That's fine.
I'm actually Tristan, but still.
So we've got Tristan Gray on with you, also known as Tomb King Tristan from Party of the All Points. So there's a little intro 20 minutes in, and I'll do a professional one later on.
Proper thing. See, this is how we do podcasts. We do the whole podcast, then we do the intro, because then we know what we talked about. Yes. We don't do that in Party of the All Points.
And then you've got Nicole to edit it all anyway.
Yeah, God, this queen that she is.
Yes, she does a wonderful job.
Yeah, especially at teaching piano, but that's a whole nother side of her. It's great.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's me.
How did you get into this hobby then?
So I have an older brother. He is the quintessential comic book guy. He is the, like, kind of husky dude who... is just super into comics, has been his whole life. So we would always be going to the comic book store to pick him up. Obviously, he's 5 years older than me, so he is my idol growing up. Thought he was the coolest dude in the world, always wanted to do everything like him, so I wanted to go to the comic book store. But since I liked all the things that he liked, he was buying all the comics that I wanted to read because they were the ones that he wanted to read because my brother's the coolest. Shouts to Matthew. And so we were in there, and I wanted to find something that could be my thing. And then one day I saw in this little comic book store these tiny little space Barbies that were just inside these little packets. And I was like, those are cool. And then I saw one was painted green and I loved green. So I decided I had to play the green Space Barbies or Space Marines. And then so this guy named Alan, he showed me how to paint a green Space Marine on top of this big stack of comic books. And I was just pretty hooked then. It was awesome just to find something that I could be interested in the store at the same time as my brother. Cause like, we were really lucky that our comic book store then was really community oriented and like having kids come in, like they loved having the little duders. And from there I started, like, I think Mordheim came out a little bit later and I got super obsessed with that game. Like I got really into it as time went on and like my dueling brace of warplock pistols and I just got super sucked in. And yeah, that's kind of how it happened. I just wanted to be like my brother, and then I couldn't be exactly like him, so I found something that was adjacent. And I've always been like really good with my hands and like pretty knacky. Like my family on my mom's side were all super mechanically inclined, and Other than my father on his side, like it skipped a generation, he's terrible with any tool. It's really funny. Like his dad and like everyone else on that side of the family are also really knacky with their hands. So for me, it was like, oh, I can build it. I can paint it. This is super cool. I love this. And so that's how I got in.
It scratches that itch of being able to do something creative, but also very minute and able to fix and build and change things.
Yeah, I can focus my OCD into it.
And where did the Tristan, the Tomb King moniker come from for yourself then?
So, for that, I had never played fantasy. Like I've never pushed a square base or gotten out my the triangular measuring thing to figure out your angles for your twisting and your turning and your slamming into people. I never did that. But in Halifax, again, that's 4 hours away, I was able to go to a Games Workshop a couple times and I saw the really cool Egyptian dudes and I was like, oh, those are sick. Too bad I don't like this game, but those are really cool. And then from there it was like, those are really sick. I was really lucky whenever we went to Ontario one time. We went to the Royal Ontario Museum, the ROM, and they at this point had a whole bunch of Egyptian artifacts inside of this really big Egyptian exhibit. And I, being I think probably 10-year-old at that point, like ran away from my parents inside the museum, of course, because I'm like that still. And so is my son. It's great. It's just my dad really loves how much of myself is in him. He's like, oh, suck. He's like, oh, sucks to suck.
You're going to know what it's like now.
You know. It's like, this is everything coming back to haunt you, child. But yeah, so I ran away from my parents. Ran into basically where the sarcophaguses were and got freaked the hell out because it was like no one else was in the room. All the lights kicked on in this huge way and all of a sudden there's just this golden death mask in my face. And ever since then, I was like pretty obsessive Egyptology. And then the Age of Sigmar kicked off my local game store after like probably 15 years of not stocking Warhammer. I walked in and all of a sudden there's just this big Space Marine in the window. I'm like, did pigs fly? Did hell freeze over? And then the owner was like, yeah, man, hell froze over. I forgot to call you. Because like they went on this huge screed of anti Games Workshop for like a decade plus. I would always wander in being like, you guys get anything in the back? Like you got any like, I don't know, Skaven or anything? Got any like, I'd even take an apothecary. Like, what do you got?
I need to cut you off here. You've done the perfect example of when Dave Chappelle was doing the cracked out meth thing and he was scratching his neck and he's got the white lips and he's like, you got it in here? And you're like, have you got any Skaven? It was.
Listen, spade's a spade. I don't know what it's like taking those drugs, but I know what it's like painting a tiny little monkey handed rat. So.
They do call it plastic crack for a reason.
Damn right. Great blog. yes, yeah, so indeed. They got Age of Sigmar back in. I was like, this is sick. I can finally paint the Tomb Kings. Let's go. So I bought a whole bunch of them. Found out that secondhand, because I was like, I'm like, I can't. I don't know. I was working at a coffee shop then. I can't really afford to buy stuff new. Found out that they had actually canceled Tomb Kings like a couple months, like a year before. And I was like, sick, sick, sick. Okay. Then I was like, oh no, they still have rules. They said there's still going to be rules. It'll be fine. I'm stupid. found the Mengel miniatures blog and became super obsessed with, like, he had just, I think, launched the Tomb Kings battle tome that he did. And it was just like perfect timing for me to get completely sucked into the world that he and all those other bros helped create. And I just got like super into Tomb Kings and just loved it. I think Rob, the Honest Wargamer around that time, also said you should pick an army and play it for a year. I was like, oh, I'm just going to play Tomb Kings for a year. It was really good that first GHB. It was really good. Oh, those points were not correct. And man, did I have a lot of fun. And yeah, so I just got really into those. And I was like, you know what? I kind of wanted to play under a moniker just because I thought it was fun. I, for almost everything my whole life, I've just been Tristan Gray on everything. Like, it's super vanilla, super milquetoast. Like, even like my Twitter is just Tristan Gray. But I decided with this, it's like, let's get a screen name. Why not?
Spice up a little bit.
And it's like, it has a little bit of alliteration. TKT, he's Dynomite, popped in my head. And it's just like, just being silly, man. It's so, that's really why the whole Tomb King happened. So it's been great. I've gotten the nickname Tomb Dad too, which is great. Ooh, after my son came, it was like, Tomb Dad, let's go. So beautiful.
And how have you found staying with Tomb Kings over the past 5-6 years as an army that's not playable? I know you've breached off and tried to do like your Sons of Setra and stuff like that, but have you found the actual Tomb Kings armies been sort of treating you?
Well, it itself was actually, I think, one of the best designed armies that they've ever done, like in a really strange way. Like, the way it played was really idiosyncratic. It had a whole bunch of synergies. It was almost like if you combined Seraphon, Legions of Nagash back in the day, and Daughters of Cain into one kind of like strange hybrid of a book.
Okay.
Because you had about 3 or 4 different distinct play styles. Tons of things had like a specific purpose. Like, that's what really sucked me into playing the army, was that like each one of these battle line options, like there was an anvil, there was a like light skirmisher, there was a like brick of troops. It's like everything hit picture perfect. Like, there were a few misses in the army, but it was like one of those things where I think they accidentally made an incredible army to play. And throughout most of Age of Sigmar 1 and even 2 and even into like 2.5, if we want to get like into the weeds about it a bit, it was actually a really fun army to play. Like, even whenever it came to like just using the Death Grand Alliance rules, like the War Scrolls themselves are so well done. And with like the on-scroll synergies, it was a blast, man. It was a total blast and treated me great. Like, I got way too good with playing with Tomb Kings and using the Mengel Battle Tome. I probably got like 50 games in or something absurd.
Okay.
So like, I knew that book from the inside and out. I loved it. Like, I was honestly really cut whenever I was going to go to my first tournament. I was going to go to one called Capital City Bloodbath in Ottawa, Ontario. More like on terrible. And it was being run by this 40K guy. And I was just like, out of the kindness of my heart, I messaged being like, oh, is it okay if I play Tomb Kings? I got some conversions. These are good, right? And the guy was like, oh, no, you can't play that. That's a Legends army. I was like, yeah, but it's, they have points in the rule book. This, look, it's the happy GHB. It's dancing for you. I'm holding up a fake book for the people in the chat, for the people at the gym. Shouts to my Hydra homies. But yeah, so I was really crestfallen because that guy actually said, no, you can't bring them. And I was like, all right, fine. I'm not going to your stupid fucking tournament. Fuck you. and then AOS 3 happened and they took all the points out. So I was like, oh, I can't play my army anymore. And that's whenever I like, because I had originally been like, oh, I'll make a couple cool giants for my army. Because actually, like, allying in the Death Giant was pretty fun in Tomb Kings, because you had like some of the other parts to orbit around. And still like have a half decent army list. But then it was like, oh, I guess I just have to make a whole army of these guys and play them. God damn it. So I was pretty crestfallen at that point. But for the most part, Tomb Kings has been a total blast. Over the last year, well, I think last year mostly, I actually made my own AOS 3 battle tome for them. Got a whole bunch of people play testing for me, like some stellar people, like Dan Brewer, I think had a couple games in, and of like testing like my final, like I'm going to release this to people. Mike Vaginos, a couple other people from like some of the world's teams were checking it out, and like I got some really nice response from them, but I just haven't quite finished off because I think I'm gonna try to do it like Mengel miniatures Darren Watson style and do it up real nice before actually dropping it. But it's just I don't know, I just love the stupid skeletons, the dry bones of the dry desert.
How do you feel about the other pseudo Tomb Kings that were released 2 or 3 years ago? How do you feel about them?
Oh god, those stupid things. I was absolutely positively convinced that it was going to be like Tomb Kings 2.0, that the guy for Malign, like, man, I got so sucked into Blind Portents. Oh god. And like I was convinced, like saw some of the artwork, I was like, this is going to be awesome. I had like some birdies in my ear being like, they're bringing back Tomb Kings, Tristan, they're doing it. It's like, that's what the guys in the studio is saying. It's like, oh my god, really? Like, yes, you should get excited. This totally isn't going to be a rug pull. And then as it got closer and closer, like some of the British was like, it might not actually be Tomb Kings. And I was like, so wait, the things that you said where they're going to bring back the old plastics and I should get more invested in this. That's not correct. And like in my head, I was like, no, they're wrong. The people who obviously know this to be true facts, they're wrong. And then finally saw the first pictures of the Osteric Bone Reapers. And I was like, oh no. Oh no. I have to go sit down. I don't feel good. Like, you know, whenever like your stress kicks in and like your stomach turns and like something horrible's happened and the stomach just drops out of your body and like is on the floor and it's going back at you going like, you're stupid. That's what happened. I was so despondent because they are almost the opposite of what I like. I hate body horror things. And it's body horror bones, like, and like it's not Egyptian specific, it's more like a like afromorphous Eastern vibe to them, right? So like it's just such a mixture. It's like it's the lack of specificity to them, and mostly the stupid clown faces just
what do you mean they're perfect?
They are some of the worst designs for me I think I've ever seen. Like,
you don't like a spinning face?
I don't need a Marmite army in my face whenever the Marmite might as well be in the ground, whatever Marmite is. Never had it, never gonna have it now. I've just heard other people say the word Marmite. Sounds great. But man, I hated those things so much. It was like everything I disliked aesthetically, and I was so pissed because it was like, oh, so they took the idea of Tomb Kings and pulled it over somebody, like, you know that scene in Men in Black whenever the guy who's actually cockroaches or like a bug dude had pulled the skin of the other guy on over him? That's what they did to my favorite thing for Bone Reapers. So like they took kind of like the general idea of it and made it stupid is how I felt.
Tell us how you really feel.
Man, I was so pissed. And like at that point, I was so jacked for it, so stoked. I had saved up like 2K like to be like, I'm going to buy the whole thing. I'm going to buy the limited edition. I'm going to buy like everything you could ever want. The whole thing. Day one, baby. Let's go. Super fan. No. I paid off some of a mortgage. I bought I was just like, for 4 days, I was like, I'm done with Warhammer. Warhammer's over. I'm going to go back to playing just basketball. Screw this game. I'm done. I'm out. Out. And like at that point, I was talking to a guy named Mr. Mephisto. He's a killer dude. Friggin' love that guy. From Wisconsin. And he was like a streamer. He was like super into it. And it hit for him perfect. Like every single thing that I hated, he was like, it's so cool. It's like bony body hoarder. It's got some samurai action, but still has other stuff. It's sick. They're slaves to Nagash. I love tax collecting. Ooh, bones. And I was just like, fuck, I hate this so much. I hate it so much.
It's crazy that it's so polarizing for the both of yous.
Oh, dude, it was so funny. Like, he was so happy, and I was just, like, in the ground. Like, I was like, bury me deep. Just cover me in the sands. So it was just really funny. Like, yeah, seeing the diametrical opposition and then having my response be like, I think I'm quitting Warhammer. I'll see you later, guys. And then the other part that was made me really sad was people who kind of knew me were like, oh, no, you have to like them. They're Tomb Kings. I was like, do you not have eyes? Do you not have brains?
But they're skeletons in the desert.
Are they in a desert?
Who knows?
I don't know. I can't tell because it's all blue and purple. But it was just really, really funny because like people were telling me I had to like it. And I was like, oh, you don't know me at all. Oh, you think you can tell me what I like? Oh, friend.
Nope. As someone that's not played around the Tomb King sort of at all, is there a way to play Tomb Kings as Bone Reapers, or is it not really something that works?
Well, it kind of works. With the new Battle Tome, actually, it's shockingly, the way that they've redesigned the Battle Tome and how like things interact with synergistically, they've actually pulled more so from those original Tomb King scrolls, which I think is very funny. Like, they made Katakros have like the same sort of idea of what Cetrid had, because before it was like kind of heliocentric for having Cetra. He was like, he put out the sick buff. It was like plus to hit, plus to wound. But with Katakros, they shifted it to plus to hit, plus to save. So it's like you get a lot more of a meat grinder in this army. The main difference is the lack of chariots in Bone Reapers. So like that's a whole different play style that they haven't tapped into yet. But like you have the catapults, you have the ponies, but like they don't play the same as the old horsemen. It's like they're more akin to what a chariot sort of was, which was an incredibly mobile, incredibly good anvil that you could bring like whole five wound bases back into. I freaking love that unit, man. It was so good. It's like, and here's the shooting phase. I rolled fives. Oh, I didn't roll fives again. But that's beside the point and too specific. There's a theme here, Sam.
Are you sure?
Are you sure, Tristan? But yeah, man, you can almost, it's not the same at all. Like but it's more adjacent now than it used to be. Like that first Bone Reapers book that dropped was like nowhere near. Nowhere near. At least to me. Because this is all like how I feel about personally and my like the way that I view the game. So like other people I know were just like, sick, I'm in. Like, I'm going to do Tomb King's Bone Reapers army. And I'm just like, it's still too soon. But this edition, I was able to like kind of get past it. I've done some fun conversions for the army too. So like I've done like so a really nice, very Tomb King's like heavy cavalry for it. And like, yeah, I just kind of like got over myself.
It took a few years.
Yeah, it took a few years. Took me playing a lot more Age of Sigmar with people who are really good at the game. Like I was able to join a really good club called Tough Crowd. And some of the people in that are insanely good at Warhammer. And I was able to like get a whole, oh yeah, man. And I was able to like rep some games with them. And like, I just understood the game more and in like a more thoughtful way. Like, I love basketball, and I'm a huge wonk whenever it comes to, like, play sets, whenever it comes to, like, because I'm a basketball coach on, like, on a provincial level, which is kind of, like, state-wise for the listeners in the other part of North America. I would help coach provincial teams, and I would, like, be setting up plays, and, like, it's, like, stuff like that. And then, like, playing it more with that nuts and bolts style of Warhammer, I was able to get over some of my, like, narrative hang-ups against the army.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that's what I played for since that Osteric Bone Reapers book dropped, I've been playing Bone Reapers, which is really weird to say, but
Bone Reaper Tristan doesn't have the same ring to it.
Oh God. Like it stings. You know, like whenever you get lemon juice and a little cut in your hand. Yeah. When after you shucked an oyster, just like, yeah, but then you still slurp it down, don't you?
Yeah, you are still playing that army, yep.
Yeah, God damn it.
So have you been taking them competitively the last sort of 6 months to a year with being in tough crowd, or what's been like your competitive and casualness with tournaments and games over the last few years?
So since I live on a tiny island off the coast of the Atlantic, I don't get a lot of opportunities to actually go to tournaments. Like, I've gone to two total in my life. One of them being going to the insane Castle Con, where I think almost every person there, except for me and like maybe two other guys, were like world's level players. And that was my first tournament. That was great. I had such a good time. Got my head absolutely kicked in a couple of games. Thanks, Dayton. But I had four great games and I played Dayton. And actually the bottom round, I convinced the person I was playing with to play doubles with me against the table beside us without telling the table beside us, that was great. Cause I was just like, which one's your general, to my buddy Ryan. And he was like, this one. Cause he was also playing Garrigan's at that time. The new Garrigan book had just dropped. And I was like, all right, can you watch these dice for me? He's like, yeah, totally. It's like, all right, that's, oh, a 12 to charge. So, and then I just put it like with an engagement range of his thing, and he just went, oh no, what? I was like, it's on the Donkey Kong, let's go, like just yelling and screaming at the bottom tables, like we've all been horrendously hungover like the whole morning. But it just completely flipped the whole thing. I went 0-5. It was great first Beautiful. tournament. And then I just went to another one recently, so like I'm probably gonna be able to get to like one or two a year. Because for me, I was supposed to go to like a couple tournaments before the pandemic hit. Like I had NashCon tickets, I had a plane ticket, like I was jacked. I was going to go be able to meet some of my real life internet friends. But, you know, pandemics happen. My wife has cancer and it's like one of those things where it's like, I don't really think it's safe for me to go and get COVID and bring it back into my household from a foreign country. And like for a lot of the time, like leaving PEI wasn't even really an option, since we're an island. We were able to hold off like COVID for so long on the island until, you know, the Tory government got in and the conservatives were like, oh, geez, oh, gosh, we can't stop the COVID now. That would hurt the economy. It's like, you know, if we die, the economy also suffers, right?
That's what did here in Australia and New Zealand. And that seemed to work fine.
It's fine. It's fine. There's only like some people dead. Only some people irreparably harmed. And so I didn't go to tournaments for a few years whenever I probably would have been. But yeah, I've been able to do like mitigating measures to make it more like something that I feel like is safe. Like my own personal little HEPA fan, like that I took with me down to Castle. And like I wear like, I found some really nice N95s and they're like, they got like breath tech. So it's like, it feel like I wear them even like while playing basketball inside now. They're super, super light and they just like clamp right over your face. And it's like, you barely feel them. And it's really weird because people are like, how are you doing this? It's like, I like people. I don't want them to die. I Googled it for 3 minutes. How, like, what's a good mask? And then I found it. And then I don't know, man, I'm still busting your ass. Like it's obviously not that hard. Or do you just suck really bad? That's what I'm like on a basketball court. So, when it comes to like competitive play, yeah, I've been taking I took the Bone Reapers to my last event, which is great. I went to a thing called FalCon, which was the very first 2-day event in the Maritimes at 2000 points, ever for Age of Sigmar. And so a sweet dude named Peter put it on over the next province over. I talked two of my buddies that I got into the game to get an Airbnb with me and a couple guys, like my pal Fred. Fred from Montreal drove down with another one of my friends, Christian Weir. They'd never met. They drove 9 hours together in a car. Wow. Christian let Fred drive his car.
All they've definitely met like, now.
Tristan likes you? Oh, yeah. Come on. Let's go, mate. So, yeah, Christian Weir. He's actually from Australia. And so drove down, we all got an Airbnb and we went to basically second event I've ever attended, first event for all my buddies locally. Like some of the guys I've gotten into it are like super into like the online, I won't say discourse, but like the online, like competitive, viewing of Warhammer. So it's like, they really love like the painting, they really love the playing, but like, they're really into the whole, like, oh, I can play this game and be good at it. And I know that's something I really like. And so like, we just practiced some and just like, we're just like, all right, what do deployments look like for each of the battle plans? And since I love having a practice plan for basketball, as a gigantic nerd, I like started making them for what I'm going to do with my army specifically, and like with my friends being like, okay, we're going to practice this specific battle plan. Then after, we're going to have a debrief and be like, what did you guys experience with this battle plan? And like, I took notes on my phone while we're drinking at the microbrewery next door to the game store. So it's pretty chill, pretty chill. Yeah. I don't know if that answered your question, but I sure talked a lot.
No, you definitely answered it. We got the results out of what we needed from that sort of question. We found out that you were casual and then competitive, and then you don't play many tournaments because you live in a small little island.
Yes. Big facts. Amazing what happens whenever you're literally 10 hours away from most tournaments, how little you can go.
Yes.
Even if it's like well, we hear it
from Dayton and everything else. You've got to do a lot of flying to get to these sort of tournaments.
Yeah. And he's closer than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he can drive to Calgary. He can like frig even go down to Vancouver. Like the traffic sucks, but he's able to do that a lot easier than I am. Cause like literally the closest tournament other than the one I just went to that just happened for the first time this year is 13 hours.
Wow. Okay.
So it's like
drastically
sick.
Different.
Yeah. Just driving away.
For someone that's, or for people that don't know the like the provinces of Canada and locations, do you mind just sort of explaining where exactly you are in terms of, because most people know a general size about of America, sure. But not so much Canada. Yeah.
So if we look at Canada and we look far to the right, if you're looking at Canada, there's these three little provinces that are, or four little provinces, they're all kind of like in a little grouping right off the Atlantic seaboard. And they, there's this one little island that almost looks like the Wu-Tang symbol on a tilt that's in the middle of it. It's this tiny little thing. But since we were, thinking about joining America, Canada asked us to be a whole province. And we had a big list of demands at that point. And we had a whole bunch of money at that point. And then we made some horrible decisions. I have a degree in literally this period of time.
Okay.
And that's Prince Edward Island right there. It's this tiny little island off the coast of the Atlantic seaboard in on the far right of Canada. It's one of the 10 provinces in Canada. There's three territories, 10 provinces. Yeah, so 13. So there's a bridge that connects us to the mainland and a little ferry that breaks down that connects us to another province. And so it's bonkers. The bridge is like 15 kilometers long.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not a small little causeway you've got to go over. It's quite a big distance to...
Nah, man. It's boring as hell. Like if you're driving in a short car, you're just like, do, 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 do. Oh, look, it's still a concrete barrier. Do, 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 do. Oh, we're coming to the slight turn in the road.
Wow. Okay.
And do, do. Yeah.
What sort of population size is there?
So right now, I looked at this actually recently. My pal Basil, he checked it out. It's like 189,000 right now is the current population of the island.
So it's a good chunk of people then.
Yeah, it's like a good chunk of people. We've got two main centers of the island. Like I live in Charlottetown. It's like the main big quote unquote city. But it's a lot of middle density. Like we don't have big long forests for the most part. It's just like rolling hills of farms and like everything's cut up beautifully in these cute little fields. And then there's like a smallish town every, I don't know, let's say 50 meter, no, 50 kilometers.
50 meters.
That breaks it every 50 meters. It's a different town. So, but yeah, it's just like, it's a sweet little place. It's a little bit backwards in a lot of ways. Like the joke is, things happen here about 40 years after they happen on the mainland. It's like, wow, we just got canned pop. Whenever I think, when did we get canned pop? I think I was like 18 when we got canned soda and canned beers. Like other than that, it was just bottles because we had a bottling plant on the island. And so like the political sway, like that's how a government got in, was promising canned pop. Can you imagine how insane this place
that's
is?
That's crazy. So when you say your degree was on that time frame, it was probably about 10 years ago. Is that correct?
Yeah. I've got like a whole bunch of stupid degrees. But yeah, I've got one in pre and post Confederation history. So like the 1860s and like 1850s to around the turn of the century. For Canada and how it like got together and like sort of that sort of area. I also have one in photography and digital imaging, and I have a degree in electromechanical technology.
So lots of degrees.
That's the last one I did. Yeah. lots of stupid pieces of paper that say you know how to do stuff good and other things good too.
Fair enough. And what is like your gaming scene like there? Because I know you said it's very hard for you to get games in. There's no tournaments. Is it quite like more of a casual scene, or like these competitive players that just don't get a chance to go to tournaments? What's sort of like your overall gaming scene there?
I would call it aspirational. We've got about 20 to 25 players that spend their times bouncing between 40K and AOS. Like we've actually got a few more, like maybe it's closer to like 40 something, but for the most part, it's like it's a really casual, like getting in a game like maybe once a month for people. And it's kind of like if you build it, they will come sorts of things. Like any, like I've thrown a few like RTTs, or like I always have to explain what RTT is. Like one dayers. I've thrown a couple one dayers, and like I get like 15 people usually. And, like I've thrown like learning leagues and like introduction things, but like for the most part, there's like three or four guys that are like into Age of Sigmar, but upwards of like 20 that might want to come to an event if I throw one, because people here are great in the fact that if like I say like this will be fun, you should come play, a lot of people be like, okay, well Tristan said it's fun, so I'll go play, and which is really nice. But so we don't have too many people who like are gigantic nerds like I am whenever it comes to like dialing for your deployment per battle plan and like watching all the Jeremy Vessier videos and like being like, I like stressing over your final 100 points as if it's the biggest deal and like what that means for your deployment, just being a gigantic dork like that. Yeah, there's me and my pal Roger and my pal John are two guys who decided to go to their first tournament, and they were guys that recently have gotten into it over the last year and a half, and they've been so much fun to play with. But like I've got such great friends here who love just Warhammer in general, but they're a lot more casual, so they'll like, my buddy Les runs double War Hydras in his Cities of Sigmar list, and he has like special names for them, and like, oh, it's great. He just runs what he likes, but he's an incredibly smart player too. So it's like this gong show, like almost Sam Morgan style list where you're like, I don't know what the crap any of this does. He's like, they're just silly guys. And then like all of a sudden you're like, why am I getting taken off by two War Hydras? What is happening right now?
Yep.
Just like, what type of mad genius are you?
That's crazy.
That's great. So yeah, my scene's like aspirational, so I think the best word to describe it.
Okay. And then sort of like your main players around you, are they still competitive, or do you mainly have to find more online games to get that competitive nature going? Because I know you said, oh mate, playing with the War Hydras was smart, but is he like a competitive player, or what about other players?
No. Okay. If I want a truly like competitive game where I want to play people that I know are better than me, it's like I have to do it online. I have to do TTS. Like my guys locally, like there's a couple of them that are like definitely good at the game, but like they're still like for the most part newish. And it's like deployment mistakes, and like they might decide to put in something into something that they shouldn't. And it's just like I'm just at that one like ounce of understanding more where I can usually like I usually do pretty well locally. And but then as soon as I play somebody who like is like I'm a gigantic Warhammer player, it's like, oh, I'm getting my head stepped on, and it's not in the nice call me daddy way. So if I want a competitive game, I'll like bounce on to the tough crowd, like group chat or the Discord, and just be like, anybody wanna play and beat me? Please.
Do you enjoy the TTS gaming?
Well, it's almost like out of necessity, I enjoy it. I really wish I could have a gigantic 3D scanner and just scan in my own little Barbies, my own little babies. And that would be like my dream, would be able to actually like use my toys on the internet and have them fight my friends on the internet. But it's like you don't get the same visceral feeling from it, right? Like I enjoy it. I love being able to hang out with my pals like from New York, or like frig Sam, or like playing Dayton, or like any of the guys that live on literally the other side of the planet, or at least country. Which might as well be Planet in a lot of ways. Like, I'm closer to England than I am to Dayton.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and Bud's about the same. Like, wow. I can fly either to... It's cheaper for me to fly to England than it is for me to fly to Bud. Like, by a couple $100. It very much so. Oh, man. Great Winnipeg airport, though. Love that airport. I have such a soft spot for Winnipeg. But yeah, so like, yeah, I like TTS. It's the close thing. I like it, don't love it, but it's like, it definitely helps me learn how, like, I am a way better player this year than I was this time last year.
Okay.
Because of it.
And that's mainly because of the online game, where you feel you had a bit of a mind shift change in your head about how you play the game.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes to both. So I got a lot. My mind shift changed because I was playing people who thought about the game in a different way. And that made me want to think about the game in a different way, too.
Okay.
So, yes, is the answer to that question. Oh, my dog just came down to visit. Hi, Rico.
I did see a little nose pop in before.
Yeah, he's a greyhound. So I'm sitting on the couch and he's basically at eye level with me. But right now he's just laying down on the literal toddler's bed that he has down here because he's a bougie baby who needs a memory foam.
Oh, nice. Always got to look after our little best friends.
Yeah, man. He's the best. He has to go to the dentist later this week, so he's not been feeling great.
Oh, that's no good.
No. Poor thing. But he'll be fine. He's happy now, and he's doing his usual thing whenever I come down to do a podcast or paint, where he just comes and hangs out beside me and just kind of goes... whenever he wants to go outside.
Yes, I get the feeling I have a little black shadow of my own, follows me around everywhere, and then you hear a little crying when they go toilet, and you're like, 1 second, and then you gotta rush out and let them out. Yeah,
you're like, you hold up your finger, hit mute on the mic, and then you run away, and then someone tries to vamp for at least 10 minutes, and then you come back and be like, you were saying a lot of words. Yeah. Thanks, Dayton. You saved me.
So with your newfound competitiveness, have you found Bone Reapers sort of scratched that itch that you want, or you feel like you're moving on to a different army?
No, actually. Bone Reapers have, yeah. This new book, like, the units I feel like have more of a purpose. And that's really big for me whenever I'm playing an army, is since I started with an army that had units that did things, it's really important for me to have units that do things, like have a specific purpose in your army. Like, they can be your light cavalry that goes, that are basically like glorified speed bumps. They are like, can be your objective takers, that have the big anvils that can take a punch and then deal with it later. And I feel like the Bone Reapers now actually have that in their army list, which is great. So I've made a pretty techie Bone Reapers list, and I've really enjoyed playing it. Like, it's been great. It's really scratched a lot of my itches. Like, I've tried to be my own little angel, my own little snowflake of a person whenever it comes to how I'm doing this, because I've seen a lot of other people's ones where they're just like, I have a whole bunch of Immortus Guard. Here are my big bony boys.
The classic. Can you deal with my big bony boys? The last book. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, the Immortus Guard right now are like undercosted for what they do. It's so hard to kill a six pack of them. Like, you do that, and then you take basically as many of those as you can do, one little foot hero and the two big named characters, so Catacross and Arcan, and that can be your list. And it's basically I push them forward. Yay!
Yeah.
I'm so tactical. And like, for me, it's like, I want to use a catapult because I'm like that. It's like, this unit objectively sucks. I'm going to make it so people go, shit, that thing was actually really good. And then I'm just cackling and which is great. Yep. Like, literally cackling and dancing around like a marionette. But yeah, so I think it's gonna be a lot of fun to play for the next however long. I'm really excited to see what this new GHB does. Like, if Miniac could leak that, that'd be great.
Yeah,
I'm kind of like, I'm just doing that, like, that's chin itch for it again. I'm like, anybody got them battle plans? Like, what's up? What's up? What's up? So I think it's gonna be really fun to play, because like, everything has, like, not everything, but many things have a purpose in the army now. And it's like, it's great to see.
And do you enjoy writing lists for your armies then? Because I know you said you toiled over that last 100 points, but is that something you enjoy doing, or something you've sort of passed along to other people to get?
Nah, I hate it. really bad at it. Like, people understand this game way more than I do. And so why push that? Like, I love having armies where I can put my own little spin on it. But like, if other people are really smart and are obsessive list making and want to like iterate, why not just take what they're doing and be like, thank you, this is really sweet of you. Dee, 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 dee. And then you just take like the things that they were very smart and thought of, and then you go like, okay, how can I do this in my way? And so with that, it's like I have a big punchy unit that people say is good. I took one of the two special characters that people say is good, but then I also went on my own little journey of, if I just play this army a lot, I know I can do things and push the right buttons where even with my less good list, I'll be able to play pretty well and it'll kind of balance it out. Maybe not against the top tables, but like, man, if I can get two wins, hell yeah. Let's
and
go.
And do you find now you're playing of the Bone Reapers, you're at that stage where you're pretty much off book and you've got everything down tact, you're more focusing on what your opponent's doing rather than trying to remember your own rules?
Yeah, 100%. This last tournament that I went to, I was off book for all of it because me and my guys had just spent like 2 months getting a game in a week and just like figuring it out. And like, I was able to snag some TTS games with the Tough Crowd boys and gals. And it was great, man. It's so much fun. Cause like, I played so many games of Tomb Kings. I knew basically exactly how much they could hit, exactly how much they could take, how like what sort of movement they would have for like 3 or 4 turns. It's like, okay, I can get over there. I can do this. If people set up, like I know my threat ranges like instantly. If people have any questions, I can answer all of them. And I've been searching for ages to try to find another army that I could do that with. Like with Gargants, the last book was like everything was just like ever so slightly different for each single Gargant. It's like, why?
Monster profiles are hard to do as well because they change so much.
So much. And then I also played Lumineth for a while. Like my pal Joe Pagano, what an angel he is. He actually sent me a bunch of Lumineth because like he was feeling bad for me and he won a bunch of like some painting competitions because he's an insane painter and like very good at Warhammer. It's great. I love that dude. Shouts to my guy. He sent me a whole bunch of Lumineth and I was like, okay, I think I really like playing this army and like I'd pick some up myself, but like just something wasn't hitting with it. But with like this latest tome for Reapers, it's like, okay, now this is hitting. All right, let's go. Yeah.
So it's all about having the right book, the book that sort of suits how you want to play and the styles that you want to play really makes it a lot easier for you to learn then.
Yeah, and I talked a lot to Darren Watson of Onwards AOS, and he's just a sweet pea, and like he's, God, what a beautiful person, man. Oh, I'm never going to remember seeing him absolutely belt out Dashboard Confessional at 3 a.m. And just having my brain just like melt and start crying. I cried a lot. Because it's like meeting someone that you know your whole life, you've been waiting to meet. And like, it's just like, wow, we are going to be friends for the rest of our lives. Huh. Sinking infidelity. it's just like dumb stuff like that, man. But he actually spoke a lot about play styles and understanding like, it's not just about like the army and like what it can do, but it's all about like what you like to do. Cause it's like, I don't know. It's like, it's you playing the game. It's like in basketball, I love mid-range pull-ups. I love post-ups and I love hook shots. Like those are like my three favorite things. And like, for me, it's like, how can I get to those? How can I get to my scoring positions? And with Warhammer, it clicked in my head after Darren was saying that the idiosyncrasies of my play style, it's like, oh, okay. I really like having like an anvil unit that can move fast. I really like having one or two big, like, I'm going to mess you up. And I like having stupid slot machine things. It's like, I just like having that little bit of variance, but I also love having like the different like movable feast of options that I can have. I don't want to have just be me and my merry band of like 18 big bony boys just rolling up the board. Like that's not, that ain't it. But it's fun for other people. Like I get it. Not for me. And it's all about finding like what you like. Yeah. So I think with the more games I played, the more I realized I actually lucked so hard into an army that fit my playstyle with the Tomb Kings, like immediately. Like my first game of AOS was with Tomb Kings, was with a like Highlander list of like, I have one of everything that I think is fun. Oh, my Necro Sphinx just hit triple sixes on its charge. Oh, my Necro Sphinx hit double sixes on its big attack. Oh, I just killed my friend's Spirit of Durthu by popping its head off with 10 mortal wounds. Let's go. And then I never played any other game but Warhammer ever again.
Do you quite, obviously, by what you've just said there, you quite like big casino roles? Do you like that as an overall thing, or do you find your mix of both?
I'm a mix of both. Like, I love having that one big, like, this could go horribly wrong for you moments. And like absolutely talking shit about it and saying how it's going to ruin their day and like just being a complete buffoon and goon about it. But then also having like things on the other side of the coin. It's like, no, I know I can go this far. It's like having the control. Like, I love being able to control the controllables, but then having that little element of like, luck, horseshoe, casino, like absolute RNGesus, like let's pray,
yeah,
like see what happens, because I love having that little bit of chaos. I'm definitely a chaos engine at heart whenever it comes to a lot of things in life. Please see stories about my son and how he is me, because it's the same chasing that kid with the crab at the beach.
So you've not really ventured off into other armies besides the Lumineth and the Tomb Kings or OBR a whole lot?
So I've done Lumineth, Tomb Kings, OBR, Giants, Legions of Nagash back in the olden days. And what else have I played? I played a couple games with, Slaves of Darkness. Slaves of Darkness. Whoops, forgot about that whole 2000 point army I painted in a retro style before it was cool. No, it wasn't. I was definitely not on the cutting edge of that, but still, Goblin Green Bases for life, let's get it.
Disgusting.
Done that. I've played a couple games of Skaven. I've played some I think that's what I've played. Did I play a Destruction Army? No. Yeah, that's what I played.
Your true home could be Destruction if you never played them.
Maybe, but I actually like I don't know, man. I just want Tomb Kings. Like I just love the stupid army. It's like one of those really annoying things where I'm just like, they just get me, Sam. They just get me. Yeah.
Have you invested in any other death armies? I know you said you play Legions of the Gash. Do you find it's a death thing, or is it more like an Egyptian thing?
Oh, I'm so aesthetically driven. I'm such a basic ass motherfucker. Like, I just want my Brendan Fraser ass, like fucking little dry bones. I don't know what it is, man. I just love desert shit. Maybe it's growing up on the beach, but I'm just like, ooh, sand makes me happy, because sand means I get popsicles. But it's like, I just really love that aesthetic. The play style itself I also really like I really enjoyed having vampires that would add +1 attack to my army. It's like, this is spicy, let's go. Or the Dance Macabre, where I'm just like, that's a sick album, shouts to the faint. Look it up if you like weird dark disco music. Great band. But it's like that making my skeleton swing twice, because there were times where I was rolling in AOS 2 140 dice and ending up with 200 and something wound rolls.
Wow.
Because it's like all the explode. Because like it used to be you could stack your the Tomb Kings had a spell that would make sixes explode, but it was just sixes. It wasn't like rolls of a six. But then you had about four different ways to add pluses to your like pluses to hit.
I wonder why people didn't allow them at tournaments anymore.
It's weird. I don't know, man. But it was like I had exploding fours. And then, but no mortal wounds and like no rent.
Yeah.
It was just like, here is 200 wounds. Save those, please. It's across your army. But yeah, so I tried out a couple different ones, but man, it's mostly just the aesthetic. I'm such a simple, simple man at heart.
Have you tried to do any desert based other armies then?
Yeah. So I've done the Desert Gargants. I've done my Cities of Sigmar. Oh, I also played Cities of Sigmar. Whoops. What a silly,
we're getting
silly,
there. We're slowly getting to the list of armies.
Yeah. So I have a Cities of Sigmar army. It's a fully converted one that's like kind of technocratic, because I got really into like the Aetherpunk style of things, where, you know, the spell hunters There's like that little snippet of lore about spell hunters that found like the old Algaraxi tech that was like from that mages, but it was all in the desert. So I made like desert 1970s inspired sail surfing techno mages as an army. And that's also desert inspired because they had to be in the desert, because almost all my stuff I've spun off of a little like fairly like small pixelated image that Tyler Mengel did of the endless deserts for his version of like where Tomb Kings came from in AOS.
Okay.
And there was something called the Carrion Isles that were these floating mountains that are these floating mesas that had like sand on top and like had like the different like necropolises on them. And like my whole, like my brain like switched on with that. I was like, floating islands, floating desert islands. Oh, I can make a gigantic necropolis that flies on the like athermatic winds of the desert. Okay, let's go. And then so like I've made a whole bunch of stupid things just off of that one image yeah. that he posted so many years ago. And I'm sure he's weirded out by it, but whatever. And so like I have like, yeah, I've got like my city's army, because I made like basically that army as a Lethesian defenders army, like OG Lethesian defenders.
Oh, yes,
here.
Yep.
So that was a combination of cities with the what's the name of the KO, Caerdron Overlords, the Sky Dwarves, and the what are the Wet Elves?
Oh, the Ineth?
Steve Turtle. Yeah, Ineth. Yeah. So like I was able to like
Dayton
have those
and
units.
Nicole would be very disappointed in you.
No, they wouldn't. I said Steve. It's fine. The thing I remember was literally the name of Nicole's turtle. Steve. And this can be really bad when it's not Steve. Yeah, so I did up a whole army in desert style with them. And and my Lumineth I did also are desert inspired, because I actually spent a whole bunch of time and a whole bunch of people wonderfully sent me like those mastheads from the Dark Riders, the other side of the warlock kit for brain not work. It's probably because I've had like
the Sperm Riders.
No, not the Sperm Riders. I've just had a lot to drink, I've realized. Whoops.
They are the dark.
They're the Dark Riders. So like it's dark the Riders. Warlocks that are the other side of it, that mm-hmm. Part of the Malusai, Daughters of Cain. Thank you. There we go. Gosh, I'm embarrassed. I'm usually good at this game.
That's another army data gnomes. What's the theme here?
What's the theme here? I buy armies and Dayton then buys them and plays them better than me. It's annoying. I don't own tree people though, so shouts to Nicole. Her new army looks great. But yeah, so I've got like a whole bunch of like Lumineth actually like head swapped with like all these desert raider heads. And like I went deep and looked into a lot of desert cultures from the Sahara specifically and did like colors on them to represent more like traditional garb for indigenous people who live in those areas. And so I just kind of like went deep on that. And then I also did a bunch of like sunset almost motifs on the armor of all the elves. So that's an army I really have to finish painting too. God damn it. Oh, Jesus.
Damn. Bring up all these old memories.
all these old projects that I stuffed into a locker and were just like, I'll get it to you someday. Bye.
Yeah.
Don't cry.
So do all the bases sort of match across all your armies then?
Yeah. Yeah. I have everything be on this like desert sand base. I've reformatted it a few times. Like as I've leveled up as a hobbyist, it used to just be like, here's really grainy sand glued to a base with Xandri dust. Ooh, I dry brushed it. Man, I'm good at this game. And now it's like I've got like 72 pieces of flare on there and like the angel dust that Dayton taught me how to do. And like I'm using different types of ferns. And like I recently started adding crystals on like a few different things in the armies to have it represent more like how, in my mind, my armies come from a endless desert that is betwixt both high-ish and shy-ish. So it's like it has like some of the aether crystals from high-ish, the aether quartz, and then it has like grave sand, so like the sand itself has like weird colors inside of it. So it's great.
And have you done a display board for any of it?
Oh god, man, I've been trying to finish that display board for years. I'm an incomplete hobbyist. Wow, just like my report cards. But yeah, I actually have a floating island display board that I'm hopefully going to be finishing this year for Armies on Parade. So I'm gonna have my Tomb Kings with my Gargants, with my Tomb Kings Gargants, going up against my Aetherpunk riders that are gonna be like cruising in trying to like steal stuff from them from these floating necropolises that I'm gonna make. So yeah, I've got a display board planned. I've got all the things built, like roughed out in the pink foam, the insulation foam. I have to buy the clear like rods that I'm going to be using for the floating islands, because there's been I've seen like again another one of the stupid things I've researched a lot. It's like how to best build these things, so it's great. But yeah, so I've got plans for one, but no, I've never done one, Sam.
When is Armies on Parade? Because I'm going to hold you to this now. It's on a
Shit,
podcast.
it's on a podcast. I know those are legally binding contracts now. That is in October,
Okay,
so
so you
I'm
got what,
finishing what I'm
4 months?
doing with my reap. Oh God, it is 4 months. Life comes at you fast, Samuel. Yeah, so I got 4 months to finish that and finish painting all the tiny little triangles and gemstones on my army right now, because my Tomb Kings right now are painted, but as I've gotten better as a hobbyist, I've done like the weird thing that apparently no one else does of going back and painting things better as
Yeah, that's
time
very
goes on.
weird. Only you
Yeah.
and Ridge do that.
Oh, it's, oh, that's right. Ridge does do that. I'm really proud of him. God, he's going to make a great dad.
You find you have like a painting style then you sort of adhere to generally?
Yeah. So as I've like gotten more into painting, so like it's something that I ebb and flow with, just like a lot of things in my life. I get really into it, and then I'll flick off and I'll flick back on. For me, it's I found I love really punchy colors, and I love a very smooth blend style stuff. But I do it all by brush, and I have a very specific style that I figured out. Like this is just how I paint, and as I said, like a little bit earlier, it's a lot of playing with textures. So it's I'm trying to get the different textures, the different feelings of each things. So while I know I'm not like the greatest painter, it's the way that I go about attacking each individual element. So like cloth, I try to paint like with a little cross hatching to try and make it look like it has like a texture to it. And then I'll make that, depending on what type of cloth it is, I'll make it like more matte. Like I'll grab like some of the hyper matte stuff and make it so like it's really like the light does not bounce off of it. It gets sucked into it. And then I will do like metallics in a super like true metal metallic. Like everything has like a flake in it somehow, but then I'm not doing it just with like washes and stuff. I'm doing it with like I'm taking different types of gold paints, different types of silvers, different like the there's this really great scale 75 set that's called Alchemy in Metals, like with an N with an apostrophe. It's hilarious. I don't it's like when I was like, how are you supposed to say this to people? Alchemy and stuff. But yeah, so this metal range has like these really cool paints that are like different mattes and different like shininess levels. And it's like as you get to your top highlight, they get duller. And so I dove into those, but then I also dove into like mixing different types of pigments into paints. Vince Venturella has a really great video where he takes these two different types of gold paints and then mixes in a pigment from another company. If you just search Vince Venturella gold, you'll find it. It's a great gold mix.
He's a gold mine of
Yeah, God.
resources.
Yeah, 100%. I think he's at video 400, I think, that I last saw. I'm just like, damn, Vincey. It's almost as many podcasts party at the All Points. Let's go. So we strive to be better than Vince Venturella, and it's never going to happen. But that's
He
fine. It's
has
nice to have
one
a
of
moon to shoot
those
for.
clocks you can wind back and just saves all the time in the world. Like the amount of stuff that
1,000%.
man does is
Oh God, it's
ridiculous.
gorgeous, dude. It's so good. So like I've taken stuff from that, but then I'm also like doing like a true metal metallic on stuff. And then it's like, yeah, playing with those things. But I just love punchy colors. Like since as I said, my thought my brother was the coolest guy in the whole world. Read so many comic books, and it was from like the 90s era whenever comics were like super punchy colors. So if I was to describe my paint style, I would say it's like Justice League International.
Okay.
Great comic book series. Look it up. Shouts to my guy Booster Gold.
right. When you see the photos, I'm sure you'll be able to work out that to a more visualization representative when you see the photos I put up of Tristan's stuff. So,
Or if you just read Justice League International, it'd be fine. I love when I love when Batman punches him out.
Well, we're going to be all night, night for you, morning for me, if we don't get into some of these listener questions. Because we've got a lot coming in last night.
It's 9 o'clock. We don't even start Party at the All Points for another hour. Like, we're good.
That's ridiculous. You guys have like 3 hour long episodes and it's like, oh, where's the, how do you do that at 10 o'clock at night?
Oh, dude, I fall asleep in the middle of, like, at the end of the podcast, you can like, you can really feel the steam dropping down and Tristan just slowly starts getting quieter and sleepier and he's gone. And then Dayton yells at me. Yeah, I'm up till 1 a.m. podcasting on a Sunday night. It's great. It's great. Yeah, that's great for my marriage.
Well, we've got one from the lovely super producer, Nicole. What are your top five all-time favorite Canadian bands?
Okay, this is an insulting question because how do you pick? I was really into the Canadian music scene, like the independent scene. Like I played in a band for a decade. I toured. Like there's so many bands I absolutely fell in love with that I think are absolutely incredible. And like Canadian music has meant so much to me because it gave me a lot of opportunities and man, it just made me feel a lot of things. I know for me, it's like the Constantines band from Toronto, like this incredible rock band. Like if you love rock and roll, listen to the Constantines. They're so good. I love the band Stars. They are a melodramatic pop group from Montreal. Like they are the softest, like bunch of fucking assholes in the world. I think their record Set Yourself on Fire is a perfect record. Like it just is. Like if you listen to that front to back, you're just like, oh, okay. No, there's no improving on this. And it's like, I think it was their first release. It was insane. So there's them, this band called Miracle Fortress, also from Montreal. It's this guy named Graham Van Pelt. It's like a solo group, but then he got people to play with him and like it absolutely beautiful, beautiful, beautiful music. Very Beach Boys vibes, but in a like, yeah, it's a gorgeous, like gorgeous band. God, Nicole, why do you ask me hard questions? I love this band called Shotgun and Jaybird. So for me, with getting into the music scene, I was really lucky to stumble upon this band that was set up out of Sackville, New Brunswick. It's this tiny little town, but it has a great art school and just a great school in general. And they every once in a while have these like transcendently good musical acts that are there. And so they had a Juno, like one of the greatest Canadian musicians, Julie Duran, was in this band with these two other guys. And this band was so good, dude. Holy shit. Like just some of the songs they wrote were so good. And like, they all went on to solo careers. Julie Duran is like, again, she won like she's won the biggest prizes in Canadian music. She was signed to Sub Pop in the 90s, whenever nobody in Canada was signed to Sub Pop. And they just made beautiful, gorgeous songs. And each one of them are incredible musicians. And I like lost my mind seeing them live. And then there's other band called $100 whose lead songwriter and singer is this person named Simone Schmidt. And I think they are the greatest living Canadian songwriter, like bar none. Like, if you listen to their songs, it'll hit you like a hammer, like just absolutely bang, bang right into your heart. Like if you love country music, look up the band $100 and you will fall in love with these people. Like Simone is God, man. I'm getting like chills just thinking about some of the show. Like they are so good. Like I've seen them live. But like tons of times, like it costs like $50 to leave my island. I would do that in a heartbeat to go see Simone, and I have repeatedly play shows. And then there's four. Screw it, B.A. Johnson. He is a Canadian national hero. He plays music that makes you want to cry laughing, with and at him. Like he has songs called that are about like things like helper monkeys, about how he wishes he had a deep fryer in his bedroom, about how. Skids down at the dirt mall want to fight him for stakes because he put them down his pants and they're on security. It's like, this is absolute gobsmackingly insane thing, but his show is so ridiculous.
Is he the one that done your intro song?
Yeah. So I told Dayton about this dude, and him and Nicole fell in love, started going to shows whenever he would be like in a, like literally 300 kilometers. And they like lost their minds for him. Like they have his entire discography now, and the dude's been going for ages. And they decided to get him to do our intro. Yeah, he does the intro to our show. I love this dude. He stayed That's at so my cool. house. Like I mm-hmm. like he's written a children's book that my son loves.
It's That's great. Crazy.
Yeah, look That's up so B.A. Cool. Johnson. He's got a song called Call Me Lothar that's about D&D, and it's about how he wants people to call him that and fall in love with him.
Very nice.
He'll be the barbarian of your dreams. But yeah, that's my top five.
I bet he will. I imagine he's quite a long, luxurious beard by the sounds of him.
Yeah, kind of. He kind of looks like Dirtmall Bud. Canadian Dirtmall Bud. If you know what Bud looks like, and imagine him if he grew up in a dirt mall, it's this guy. He's from the same place as Ridge. He's from Hamilton. He's a Tiger Cats fan.
I messaged Dayton, and he sent me a lovely question. Where does your drive to succeed and be competitive at everything you do come from?
Probably my dad. I think that's the right answer. My dad bounced around. He was kind of an army, like we'll say an army brat. Like he grew up in going to like boarding schools and stuff. Like he went to a Jesuit boarding school down in the States where his roommate was the guy that ran Jeopardy, and the other Bob that was in his grade was also his friend and owns a gigantic winery, like one of the biggest wineries in North America, like this insane boarding school. But he grew up with getting instilled values that were like, if you're going to do something, you might as well do it right. And that's kind of got pushed down onto me. And like my mom was an overachiever too. And like she taught me that being kind whenever you're doing things is super important. Like so did my dad, but my mom's like very much more emotionally switched on than he is. But they just kind of both pushed me that like, if you're going to do something, you might as well do it with your all. And honestly, it was coaching basketball too. Like, whenever you're trying to convince other people to try their best to do things, you kind of lose the excuse where you shouldn't try yourself. And like, I just love team sports and like trying to get stuff done as a group. And for me, it's like anytime I'm doing anything, like be it work, be it Warhammer, it's like, I love involving other people. And if I'm going to do something, why not have other people do it with me? And why not try our best? Because if you're going to put time and energy into something, it doesn't make sense not to give a shit. Like I love giving a shit. It's like something that like I'm just an old punk dude. Right. And for me, it's like, you got to do it yourself. I come from a small ass island where if you don't do anything, nothing happens. So you might as well do something. And, hi Rico. Hi. Hi. How's it going, Pooch?
Very cute.
He's got right up in my face.
We've got a dog on screen.
dog on screen. Hello. Well, thanks for the kiss. But yeah, so like if you come from a small place and you have to get something done and your parents are telling you, who are like seen as wonderful people in society by most of the province because you come from a small place. And literally I grew up as being Mr. Gray's son or Miss McKinnon Gray's son, which was not great for the dating pool. Can I tell you that? Tough. Thanks, Rico. Thanks. Yes, honey, I know. And don't breathe into the mic, dog. But yeah, that's kind of where it comes from. My family and running out of excuses when talking to teenagers.
Okay. Well,
that's really it.
Yeah. Right. We've got back. Some lovely back, questions please. From the wonderful Bud. He wants to know why you hate NCAA basketball.
Oh, because it's trash. The shot clock's too long. The key is too wide. No, the key's not too wide. The 1-1 system, I think, is terrible. They should just be playing FIBA basketball. Their 3-point line is garbage. Their refs are not trained well enough whenever it comes to how the modern game is played. And it just is incredibly boring because in the NCAA, it's more about what the coaches think and do and less about how the players play. And a lot of players are being underserved by their coaches, where they're being forced into systems that don't work for them instead of having the coach do what should be right for their players and making it so it works more for their players.
And this is Canadian college basketball?
American college basketball. Canadians have it right. Okay. We actually play FIBA rules.
Okay.
And then what is America's stupid.
What is your favorite Joakim Noah moment?
Oh, man. Okay. Joakim Noah, he's this beautiful, insanely ugly, like full-ass floppy hair, like half French dude. His dad was a professional tennis star. His mom was a Swedish supermodel. And he grew up in New York City getting told he was a spoon-fed kid, but he's the hardest, grindingest basketball player you've ever met. But he loves wearing bucket hats and getting high as hell. He is one of my all-time favorite basketball players because he's a sweet passing, trash-talking, shot-blocking big man. And I love those people because I can see myself in them for no apparent reason because I'm a six-foot-ass white dude. But great personality, great dude. He had this one moment in the playoffs whenever he was a younger player where he did a chase-down block to help seal a triple overtime win against the Boston Celtics whenever they were the capital B Boston Celtics, like best team in the league. And in that moment, he blocked the dude, came back down the court, and absolutely yammed on top of this guy named Paul Pierce, fouled him out of the game on the and one, and we won the game because of it. It was incredible, jaw-dropping. Like, it was like one of the greatest moments. I don't remember how old I was in college, I think, and I was on my couch screaming, getting yelled at by my neighbors. It was awesome. Fucking love
that. If you can't tell, Tristan is a massive basketball fan.
Yes, 1,000%. If you can't tell, yeah. Do we want to talk about horn sets next? Floppy? Like what? Yeah.
Craig Anderson wants to know which Tomb King character would be the best at basketball.
Okay, I thought about this. It took me 3 seconds because the answer is obviously Prince Apophat. Sorry, I've had a lot to drink. The Scarab Prince. Because he's got the movement down. He's got the sneaky skills. He's got a great fast first step. Like, you know he's going to get to the basket because he's going to stop him. He can incorporeal and like just move his little skull with the basketball up and go through the rim. Obviously him. He's got the hops. He can go up high. It's easy. Bang, bang.
How far does it take to become travel then?
Well, if you don't have feet, you're not taking 2 steps. So,
loophole.
There you go.
I mean, can you then cut off your legs and play basketball and then not count as traveling when you walk down the court with it?
Yeah, because if you're playing wheelchair basketball, you have to do a couple steps before you dribble. You have to do a couple of pushes before you dribble, and you don't actually have to dribble that much. So it's really just you're going into the chair and playing the murder ball version of basketball. Great sport. Insanely good shooters.
It looks deadly. That sport looks deadly.
Like, it's so much fun, man. You've probably never played it, but
I've never played it. No, surprisingly.
Yeah, I've played it and it's great. God. The passing there, like you can do such weird stuff. It's great.
I bet. we've got the wonderful Ridge. What is the weirdest thing that East Coasters do compared to the rest of Canada?
Drink liquor out of a shoe and kiss cards.
Okay. Is that different to doing a shoey?
Yes. Because you have to do it specifically with a specific screech beverage. It's mostly Newfoundlanders. You have to do that. Oh, we also, most of us didn't join Confederation until like 20 years after the rest of so-called Canada. So that's pretty funny. But yeah, so if you're getting screeched in, you have to drink screech, which is a moonshine variant out of a big rubber boot or a work boot. And if you go to Newfoundland, you can get screeched in and you have to kiss the cod because you have to kiss a gigantic codfish because that was like their main export. And these things are like full on like 4 foot long fishes and they got these big pointy lips.
Oh, rural Canadian things.
Yeah. Oh, man. Rural Canadian things. Yeah. Jeez Louise.
What are your 3 favorite East Coaster words or pronunciations/phrases?
Okay, slippy is number one with a bullet. Instead of saying things are slippery, we say they're right slippy. So that's number one. I love the way that we say car because it's car.
That sounds very Australian, car.
Yeah. So it's like something about the language. But like I'll go across Canada and people will be like, can you say car again or house? It's like, God, you people from Manitoba are so simple. And then I love the way that French Canadians say the word alpine. So it's like there's a beer called Alpine that's from BC, but it's for some reason a huge beer in rural New Brunswick. I lived there for like 4 or 5 months in the middle of nowhere. Like I saw like snowy owls in the middle of my town, and there should not be a snowy owl in a like any sort of town. That's how north it was. It was ludicrous. And so these people speak like a really staccato tick, 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 like much more France style French than the rest of Canada. Cause like the France French people disguise Quebecois French as a dog with peanut butter on the roof of its mouth. Okay. And I lived in France for a while, and oh boy, did I get made fun of by a bunch of old ladies. like that's from a lady telling me that to my face whenever she told me I spoke disgusting and I should never speak French. And I should, I'm fully bilingual. But yeah, les Alpines, j'en veux un Alpine beer, mate. Now it's like this weird, like chillac. That's the name of the weird mix of English where it breaks people's brains when they first get there. Cause it's like every second or third word is one of the other two languages you're flipping between.
Oh, but yeah, wow. Okay.
Alpine. So when I get like kind of ham fisted, or should we say quite on the claws, if I want, and if I ended up out at a bar, out on a patio, I'd be like, oh, I need an Alpina. If I know the bartender. So I'm not a dickhead.
And then why do you cry so much at Warhammer tournaments?
Okay. So I went to my first Warhammer tournament, and it was CastleCon, and it was literally full of 40 of the people that I got through the pandemic, like the main closure of the pandemic with. It was such an overwhelming force of love and adoration. I'm about to cry right now. That whenever you're meeting people that have meant so much to you, it's hard to keep it in. And I'm really lucky in the fact that I'm pretty in touch with my emotions. Like I've always been a very emotionally driven person in a way that lets me feel things and get through moments in life. Cause I'm like, I'm going to cry right now. This is how I can get through this. And it's like, I can find ways. Like I think feeling your emotions are really important. And when you're getting to spend time with your people, like I've felt really disconnected a lot in my life because I'm a huge jock who is a huge music nerd, who is a huge Warhammer nerd. And so like mixing those three things is kind of like, I was always kind of the odd man out. So like I'm in band camp, but I'm wearing like basketball jerseys and like painting space marines in like my bunkie. Meanwhile, it's like all these people who are super into classical music are like, what's wrong with this guy? But like going to that, I cried probably like, dude, 10 times. Like I cried meeting like my friend Will Slanice. Like I think we cried together. Like, fuck, I'm crying about it now. Like 3 times that weekend. It's whenever you're with the people that mean so much to you, it's hard not to, man. And like, even at Falcon, I cried. Cause like my buddy, one of my friends was like pretty nervous about going, but he had such a good time at the end of round four. He was like, man, I can't wait to go to the next one. Like, I can't wait to book like for next year. This is going to be so much fun. Do you think we go to like another one before next year? And like, this dude was so stressed out. And like, it just meant so much to me that we had built a space as a community that somebody who could be that scared could feel that comfortable again. And just like, oh yeah, I'm crying right now. It's because I'm incredibly soft and I'm like, stay soft. Like I think it's really important to be in touch with your emotions and to feel things, to feel them deeply, and to be in touch with other people's emotions. Yeah, that's why I cry so much at Tournaments Ridge. I can't wait to cry with you, you stuffy old dad. He's about to become a father, and I can't wait for him to cry with me. It's gonna be great. Come Cry With Me, a great song by Daniel Romano. Let's go.
And then, has Felix caught any new Pokemon?
Yeah, actually today he caught a Nosepass for the first time. It's like, it looks like an Easter Island figure, but it has just gigantic red nose, and he's super hyped on it.
Pokemon are wild now. I still only remember the first like 300 and something. Hearing something like that, I'm like, what the hell?
That's not even like one of the new ones, dude. Like they've got like crystallized versions of one. There's one that, so I got the new Pokemon, and there's one that's just a spider, but it looks like a ball of string with legs. And there's one that just has like motorcycle wheels on its chest. And you're like, what is happening?
What the hell?
It's just like, what is going on? Pokemon.
They all went from like these harsh sort of angles with the first sort of two or three seasons, like what are they called? Like generations. And now they're all soft and round. Like all the Pokemon just all have like round nodules everywhere. And
it's beautiful. Sort of like there's the one that literally looks like an ice cream cone. It's like, all right, me and Vanillite, we're down. It's one of my son's favorite Pokemon. I print off pictures so we can draw them and paint them different colors ice cream. This one's going to be mint chocolate chip, daddy.
That's crazy. Nice.
You get it. My man's
there's a perfect one to move on to. We've got Slanice himself.
Oh, God.
How can
we
get more of the Warhammer community involved in doing good as well as having fun?
I think it's just one of those moments where if people are willing to present good moments for people to do good things, people will join in. Like whenever I run Warhammer tournaments here locally, we'll do raffles or like we'll do like half the prize money that we have goes towards a local women's shelter. That's a that like you don't have like we pick specific charities to like work with or to go towards. I also think it's important to create spaces where people can go to. So if you're doing a Warhammer tournament, you want to do good. You want to have it be something that people can look at and be like, oh, this is something that the community can hold up as a good thing. It's like you do things like you build filter fans where you make it so it's less likely for COVID to transmit. Like that's a really easy, like that might cost you $30, bro, to do. You build maybe 30, like to like $100 if you do a couple of them. And my dog just ran into the wall. He's really cute, but he's really dumb. Poor thing. Now he's back on the baby bed. So it's like, it's little things like that. And like, yeah, we work with a, or at least whenever I run tournaments, I always think it's important to have like ways for people to donate money. Cause like as Warhammer players, like for the most part, we have ways that we can use our spending power to do good in the world. Like I've been trying to spit it out, but this women's shelter, it's like a non, like you can go there if you're having substance abuse problems. Like even if you're drunk, you can still go. And it's like, it's really important to have shelters like that and to have places where people can go in their worst moments, even if a lot of society doesn't want to admit that that's how things work. But it's important to support the things that do really well in your community. Like if there's like you want to have things where Warhammer can be a driver for good. And for me, it's like using our spending power to do things that lower barriers for people. So you're doing a raffle, you use that money towards like buying food, not so much for the local food shelter, but if you have a food open like kitchen, like we've got spots around our town where it's like it's a basically a cooler that people can just go to and grab what they want. They don't have to interact with people, they don't have to have any kind of judgment, they don't have to prove anything. If they just are in a tight spot, there's food in that fridge. It's community fridge. You go support community fridges, you're helping your fellow people, like you're doing things that are good in a very actionable way that if you just gave money to like, let's say the Red Cross or other things, that money doesn't get spent directly to people. It's all about building spaces that people can be a part of and about putting our money where other people's mouths are. So to me, it's like you want to do direct action stuff.
Because you're quite involved with the community around you, aren't you?
I try to be. Like for me, it's important to give a shit. Because as I said before, if you're going to do something, you might as well do it right. And if you're living, you might as well live right. So like we got hit by this gigantic ass hurricane. It knocked out power from my house for 11 days and my whole like local community, including the old folks, like provincially owned and operated old folks home. And I'd never been over there before, but like the place was leaking. They had no power. They had no food. Like, so I just started organizing, like making sure that they were getting coffee. They were getting flashlights. They were getting blankets and like tough crowd, actually. Holy shit. Like my Warhammer club did more than the provincial government did for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Like the fucking gang got together, and I'm about to cry right now. Woo. They sent me money so I could keep my community. Damn it. they sent me money so I could help keep my community warm, keep them fed, keep them happy. And like, it's just important to be, if you're going to live with people and do good things. Yeah. And there's the tears. There we go. If you need me, I'm just crying because my friends are awesome.
Yeah. No, that's awesome to hear.
Yeah.
He also wants to know, have you got like favorite dice to roll, like being your charges or favorite yeah. dice to least favorite dice to miss?
So my favorite thing is something called Curse of Years. It's on Arcan, the Black Spore
Scroll. I hate that spell.
It is the best spell in existence. You have terrible taste. You roll 10 dice, and if you get sixes, you get to roll them again. And if you get fives, you get to roll those dice again. So it's this stupid, it should only do like maybe three wounds, but you can just keep going till it gets down to 2+, and you can delete the world. You can delete an entire like god level character in one go. I've taken off so many stupid things of that spell. And there's so many times it's done literally nothing. And I've built it up as this huge thing for my opponent that they have to be very concerned about. They're saving an unbind for. They're freaking out about it. And sometimes it does diddly squat, even if it goes off. But it's my favorite thing because it'll be like, oh, there goes your 30 block of plague bears, Jeff. Sorry. Sorry at all. Oh, is that a 12 pack of Varengard or however many you can have maximum? They're all gone.
Oh, it's such an iconic sort of Age of Sigmar spell, even though I believe it was in fantasy, but just the way it's either doing so much or doing absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. It's great. I cast it on like a Bone Reaper. Like I had a mirror match in my last thing. I cast it on a 5-wound hero. I did no mortal wounds each time I did it. It was great. Like, sure, I'm just trying to get rid of a linchpin. It only has 5 wounds. This shouldn't be that hard.
What's one of the best spellcasters in the game? Do nothing.
Yep, absolutely nothing. It's great. It's a great spell. The thing I hate to miss most in this world are short range charges. Drives me.
Yeah.
Drives me absolutely crazy. Like, oh man. Because in the old Tomb Kings book, there were like units that specifically had things where like you had a minimum of a 6-inch charge. I was like, oh, I'm fine. Like, oh no, I rolled the three. I still get in. So I was just like, I love breaking people's hearts with stupid things like that. It's like, I rolled. Oh, I didn't need to. Whoopsies. I told you this a lot earlier, and I told you this before I rolled it, but you kind of half forgot, and you got happy for a brief moment. And then yeah.
You're happy at my failure.
Yeah. Rico. No.
We've got the lovely Shaunza. Do you think it's your heartwarming personality or dashingly good looks that's attributed most to your success in Warhammer content creation?
Well, obviously, as this is a visual medium, it's definitely my dashing good looks. I have a face for radio. It's great. I think it's mostly my unabashed ability to be up at all hours and to be omnipresent and to just belligerently act like people are my friends before they are. I think that's the main thing. It's like, no, we're friends. Yeah. We do Warhammer. You don't get it yet.
All the stories I've heard of you, it's like, oh, this new content creator or this person's talking on like Twitch or Twitter. It's like, oh, there's Tristan. Of course he is.
Can I say, I just really like Warhammer, man. It's great. And I like for about 7 years, Rico, don't lick the mic, bro. Come on. I'm trying to do a podcast here. Again, the dog is here and he is tall enough to get to the mic. I know that won't cut through, but still.
man, come on.
Where's I going? Yeah, I really like Warhammer. My job for the last 7 years has been as a panel builder. So for the most part, I'm at work at 6:30 in the morning. So it's like, oh, cool. I'm just able to watch every single show that's made in England. Great. Live as it goes on. Cause I'm putting together adult Legos that are 600 volts. Cause that's how it works. But yeah, it's my face. It's a great face. I have a great face.
Okay.
Much like Sean.
Beautiful face from this angle.
Yeah.
And then will you come to Australia with all your paid leave?
Ooh, because Sean knows I just got literally 10 times the paid leave that I had at my last job for new job. And the answer is no, I'm going to go to New Zealand, Sean. Fuck you. Come hang out. We're going to go to New Zealand.
It's only 3 hours away from us.
Yeah, come on, Sean. You won't go 3 hours for me? Come on. I literally won't go.
You're going 27 hours or so to get to New Zealand.
I think it's 29 for me because I don't get
and
to go.
You can't even go three, Sean. Jeez.
No. Yeah, Sean, that's really selfish.
And then our last sort of section is from Russell Crowe, who I believe is also Nick Wright, who got caught and had to do a shoey on stream.
Hey, you love to see it.
What has been the most challenging part of starting or maintaining your podcast momentum? And if you could go back and alter your approach on one thing you did, what would it be?
I would say it's having a plan, executing it, and just having the will to keep going, because we do basically weekly podcasts for people who don't know.
Unless Dayton's not around.
Yeah, see, there you go. So Dayton, mercifully, is a single-minded, driven individual who's like, we do a podcast. We do it every week. You're going to do it, Tristan. But I am like a perfectionist in a lot of ways. So for me, it's like I want to have a plan for each episode. I want to make sure we hit our notes. I have like, whenever I started doing the podcast with them, I showed up with show notes and like, here are the beats we're going to hit. Do you guys want to add anything to this? And they were both like, what's a note? What's a, what? And like, cause like, again, if I'm going to do something, I don't know, might as well do it in a way that makes me happy, which is apparently obsessive compulsive, ignoring of what I should be doing at work and doing that instead. But it's just having a plan. For me is Dayton has to push me forward because Dayton is the best and he's got a lot of cushion for pushing, so it's good. And if there's anything I could do, it'd just be plan more shows in advance. Like we do quite a few right now off the rip, and I would love to get back to having just that little bit more planning. And oh, I would love to do pre-show chats or like throughout the week have like a show, have like a check-in for half an hour just to chat. Man, we should do that. That'd be a really good idea.
I'm sure Nicole would love editing that.
No, well, no, it'd be like me and the other goofballs would just get together. God, I'd love to hang out with Nicole for half an hour a week. Are you kidding? She's the best podcast host that we have on the show. Like, bar none. She's the one with actual training other than Bud. She's so good, man. It's so annoying every time that they do those Lady Nights episodes.
Oh, they're brilliant.
So
I love them.
They are like their appointment listening, like as soon as they drop, I'm like, I'm stopping everything I'm doing because they're so good. She's so talented in so many things she does. Nicole's a goddamn, like, oh, so lucky to have her in my life.
Okay. And then, so I have a few questions for you. What's next for yourself then? Have you got any new armies on the horizon, any new tournaments or any plans in the Warhammer space?
Well, with my new job, I think I'm actually going to be able to get to maybe two more tournaments this year. So I'm pretty like rocking. I'm honestly right now literally rocking back and forth being so excited about it. So I'm hopefully going to get back to CastleCon, which is like invite only. Bunch of douchebags getting together in the middle of nowhere at this weird castle Airbnb. It's incredible.
It sounds like so many pools.
I literally cried a dozen times. That's how much fun it was. They have a basketball court in the basement. So I was just like being like, who's next? Who's who will come
you down
die?
There defending the basketball court?
Yeah. Me and Nate Trentinelli just going at it. And I'm completely shit faced. And just being like, and I jab step and I pull up and it goes in again. So I trash talk so much at basketball because it's funny. Because I'm a 6 foot white guy. But it's like that. I might be going down to Everwinter down in Boston. And for me, it's like no new armies, I don't think. I think I'm just going to be painting my stuff for Armies on Parade and just refining what I'm doing with my Tomb Kings that I have. But I guess the big thing is in November when the Tomb Kings come out and I have to remortgage my household to buy it.
I've got to ask you about that. Yeah. How are you approaching that?
Oh, man, I'm going to buy so many friggin' things. I'm going to buy the stupid things. I'm going to buy like anything that has like a Tomb King face on it. Because like whenever you're this obsessive Warhammer, but you don't actually have a thing that they make that can be your like the thing that you look to, the thing that you get to be like, oh, I'm the person that does this. It's jaw dropping to me every time I get to read Tomb Kings on the community page. I'm like, ooh, it's real. Goody. Like I've almost bought the White Dwarf, you know, the t-shirts they have on on the Warhammer site where it's just like an old cover of a white dwarf that for some reason still has a barcode on it. It's like, why aren't you taking those off? This is stupid. I've almost bought like three of those that are just like the Tomb Kings release ones. And I'm like, why do I want a barcode shirt? This is dumb. And like, I just can't wait for all the stupid, like, I can get a mug, I can get this, I can get that. Cause it's like, ooh, it's my favorite thing. It's my favorite thing.
Is there a scene for fantasy when it comes out in your area?
I hope not. I'm not going to play it.
Okay. You just want the models.
Do you know what? That's a lie. I'm going to play with my friend John because he's very excited for the Square Warhammer. I'm going to play it only with him. I'm not like, it's just like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't like rank and flank games. I love the skirmish, like the way that they play. I've tried playing a couple rank and flank games. It just doesn't click. It's like whenever you know, like you bounce off things, it's just like, no, it's not for me.
Fair enough.
But I'm going to buy the shit out of those models, Sam. I'm going to buy so many of them. I'm going to paint them up like the goddamn jewels that they are. I'm going to buy the t-shirts. I'm going to buy the lanyards. I'm going to buy so many stupid things. I'm so excited.
Are you missing any Tomb King models then?
Let's see. None that I like. No, I've been really lucky. I've had a couple friends pick me up thing. Jacob Berry picked me up.
I remember him buying that random box in the middle of nowhere that was still on the shelf. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah, man. So I've been really lucky. I actually have most everything I want. I would love to get another box at Tomb Guard. But like, I've got one still in shrink on the shelf in my studio that I have. I have just about everything. Like it's pretty fun. I got really lucky with like some secondhand sales. I've done some character things. Actually, this is a lie. I want a whole bunch more Ushabti. What am I saying? I want like 20 Ushabti. If anybody has Ushabti that they do not want, please send them to me. I want the double blades. I want the shooty boys. I want them all. I love them. I can't wait. I really hope they make new ones and that they're gorgeous, but I still just want to have more of the old ones because I think that they are perfect. And to me, that's everything.
So are they releasing, because I'm not kept up with the old world because I'd never played or have interest in a whole lot of that. Are they releasing any new models for Tomb Kings or is it just the one model that comes with the box set?
So from what I understand, like this is all hearsay and definitely things I've not heard from very specific people. from what I understand, there's going to be a release box that's going to have a whole bunch of Tomb Kings in it, all new sculpts, all in plastic. And then there's going to be the one that they showed and a couple other resin ones. And then there's going to be a big ass Tomb King's dragon, which is weird to say. And I think a couple other kits. They're also going to be re-releasing the Tomb King's 2011 plastics. So the Tomb Guard, the Sepulchral Stalkers and Necropolis Knights, as well as that's like the double kit of the Snakey Boys. And then also the Necro Sphinx. So they're going to re-release all those, but then none of the heroes. I don't think. I think they're redoing all the heroes. But that's what the birds have twittered in my ear.
It's where your wallet is going in the next few months.
Yeah, man, I can't wait. I've made bets with people about if it's going to be Tomb Kings or not. And I'm calling them in.
Cashing it all in, yep.
Yeah. Let's go. If anybody wants to buy me Christmas presents, I'll take them. I am very much open to anything that's free. I am a sucker for like, oh, you're not, oh, you do not, I'll take it. Like, I love getting bits and stuff. So like if people just have like, I just have a bag of bits. Anybody want this? I'm always like, yep, 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 yep. It's me. I want it. I want it. And so I know just love free shit. So if you want to give me free shit, please, I would love
doesn't?
It.
Who doesn't?
I don't know. Some people are weird. My wife's like that. She doesn't really, I know. She's like, doesn't like clutter. I'm like, yeah.
It's free though.
Don't look in my toy room. Thanks. Yeah. Or as I call it, my art studio.
Oh, there you go. That's how you sell it.
Yeah. And she loves it. So it's great. She shows it off to her friends whenever they come over. Check out all this nerd crap in his art studio. And then her friends are always like, this is incredible. Oh my goodness. What? He did this himself? And she's like, yeah. Can we go do other stuff now? And her friends are always like super into it. And I think it's so cute because she's like, God damn it. I get the barbecue today. It's like, are you having another conversation about Warhammer? It's like, yes, honey. Yes, I am. She's like, he gets everybody into this game. It's like everybody but you.
Yeah. So she's not interested in it at all then?
No, she's my white whale someday. Someday I'll get her. Yeah.
Yeah. But no. Do you have any shout outs then before we end the podcast off?
God, right now, just shout out to my friend Will. Will Slanice Kern. He is a beautiful human being. I love him dearly. He's meant so much to me. And he makes me know that there's other people in the world that feel the same way that I do. So just shouts to him.
And if you want to hear more of this lovely, sultry tone of Tristan's, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me at Party at the All Points. We are a podcast. Find us on literally everything. If you like podcasts, just search Party at the All Points. We do a weekly show where it's like you just get three new best friends who will laugh and giggle at your jokes too. We talk about Warhammer in a way that is very approachable, and it's just a bunch of goofballs being goofs, man. Like, it's not so much a broadcast as it is just like the friends that you can make if you just get on the internet and like Warhammer. Like,
hence why Baal is on there all the time with his sultry
tones. Yeah, man. Oh, God. Those luscious, luscious lips. He's right now actually hanging out with Bud and Dayton instead of me. So he chose them over me. So Carl and I are fighting. Yeah, I said his Christian name, Carl, because we're fighting.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to come on, Tristan. I've enjoyed this a lot.
Oh, man. Thanks so much, Sam. I love your podcast. Sincerely, it is one of my favorite things. Like, I was really excited whenever you hit me up. I was like, oh, I never thought that you'd want to talk to me. God, I talk too much.
Of course I would. I enjoy your podcast too, mate.
Man, honestly, that means a lot to me. Like, I was telling my wife how, like, I get to be on my favorite podcast. I'm so excited. She's like, it's Warhammer, isn't it? It's like, yes. He's so thoughtful and he sounds so good. He cares about audio. He's like, oh, not like that bald guy. It's like, no, don't talk about him. He's a sweet man. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. Brilliant to speak to you.
Cheers, man.
Thank you for listening to Unidentified Wargamer. You can find links for the guests located in the description below. You can find the show on Twitter at @u_wargamer, and I will see you next week.
Keep your stick on the ice.
Pardon?
Keep your stick on the ice. It's a Canadian saying.
I've never heard of it.